All right, this is part two of our, I don't know how you call it.
Podcast?
I mean, that's a general term for it. But I guess, yeah, I mean, it's the same guest. And this is...
We've enjoyed it so much, we decided we're going to stay for part two.
Anyway, I'm Zeke. Yes. Got Ping. Got Wayne. Part two. We just spoke about rest before, and now we're going to speak about money this week. Money. Big topic, isn't it?
Yes.
Where do we even start?
What is money? No, seriously, one time someone asked me, what is money?
Did you answer?
No, I think this person was like, there are two things in our world that is really hard. Like if you had to explain to an alien,
okay,
what is time and what is money?
Why would aliens not know what time is? Money, maybe not, but this current... Okay, sorry. You carry on. Keep going.
If you were an alien, there was probably two things they want to know, which is time and money. If the alien was in like a timeless... Come from a timeless world.
Okay, sure.
But anyways, not that... I don't want to get into whether or not aliens exist or not, but yeah. If we were to explain what money is, yeah, I wouldn't know how would you explain it?
I've got an answer in my mind. Wayne, do you have an answer in your mind?
Sure, but... This feels like it's like the beginning of an IQ test. Yeah, it's
not
like
a trick question.
Yeah, without going on too much of a tangent on the time one, maybe money, if I had to give my on-the-spot guess, I would say is a way in which people quantify
an exchange of things,
maybe? An exchange, yeah, that's pretty good, I like that. An exchange of a certain good or a quantity, yeah, a certain measurement used to measure, yeah, how they're gonna, yeah, how people exchange things.
Right.
That's not it, but happy for you to give it a shot, Zeke.
It's a way to assign value to something in which you exchange for other things of value.
Oh yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, yeah, same. Yeah, I think we same thing. Yeah, yeah, same. That's right.
Well, that's what currency is, right? Yeah. I mean, before it was cash money, which I mean, obviously, no, sorry, not before. The principle behind it is bartering with each other. So if my dog is worth, how do I know what my dog is worth for your chickens? So instead of just exchanging four chickens for a dog, let me exchange these coins which represent
something more universal.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I mean, in a perfect world, I like to think we can live in a country where we didn't need it to have things quantified, where people just worked, and if you wanted something, you just go into shops and you pick something you like, you come home. There's no exchange of any currency in a perfect world, but you know, we don't live in a perfect world.
So, that's the bartering system, right? Like, you just walk in and you say, I just want four dogs. And then I'm going to exchange and give you these six pints of milk.
There's not even exchange.
Oh.
You just live in a society where people take as much as they need, but not like without being greedy. And then everyone just, then our values are not attached to like a certain number.
Is that communism?
That's what I was thinking.
Or
I'm
socialism.
I think it's just pingism. Pingism. Never been tested.
It's awfully ironic coming from a person who's Chinese too.
I don't mind communism
it could work though. I mean,
there
it
is
could work.
The term for
everyone think, sharing resources, right?
Well, yeah. Well, the saying they say about communism, I believe, and I might be wrong, is in a perfect world, communism actually can be good. In a perfect world.
Oh man,
sinless world.
I hope this doesn't get picked up.
We don't work. Yeah,
by security or what do you call them? Yeah. Like the federal police or something, and be like, hey, these guys are like communist sympathizers or something. Yeah. But I don't know. Yeah. I don't think I understand that concept well enough to say whether I'm actually for it or against it. So
it's probably not going to work. But I like to think that what would it look like if I went to work, not because I had to earn a certain amount, but just because I enjoyed the work.
Yes.
And then if you go out, you're relying on everyone to be part of the same team and not be greedy. But I think I don't know. Maybe whoever invented this system was just pure evil. And that's how we are where we are.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay. So we're talking about work and money. So why do we work, which is to get money? And I suppose there's, a struggle in work, which is sometimes we want to do it for more than just money, right? I think this goes all the way back to week one, where we're talking about what we're made to do work for, which is not to earn money, to do other things. It's actually work to work in itself. And there's certain things that we do, but we are just workers, right? So I think going back to week one, I think one of the quotes back then was, people who work for a greater cause are often more satisfied than people who just work to feed themselves or something. Or just for the sake of gaining for themselves. Like, I think feeding yourself, again, we talked about this last week, there's a importance to feeding yourself. You have to do it, obviously. But working for a greater purpose. That's why people who go to war feel like there's more of a calling, a cause, and they're willing to commit themselves to it, even though the pay is dismal, compared to people who are just earning to make dollars to accumulate things. So I don't know. What's your guys' experience?
Did you say it's people who go to war?
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, there's like a purpose behind
there's
that.
There's a purpose.
If I was like someone who was creating an army,
yeah,
I would just be like, salary is like $1 billion.
That's not
because
how
half the people are not coming back, right? So it's like, well, you never have to like...
pay them.
Yeah.
No, they have to pay the wives.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, no.
You pay the estate. That's how it works when you die. The next generation gets...
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't pick know that single either. Men who are not married then.
Yeah. That's what they... Anyway. What do you guys think about your experience of work and money?
I remember being offered my first job back in 2008. And at the time, I thought, wow, this is... I was just happy just to get a job.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, to be honest, I wasn't thinking on the amount or... And when you graduate uni, you're just like, oh, just get a job.
Yeah.
Any job.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then I was living at home at the time and the money was more than enough for me to survive. And so, yeah, that was my first job. And now I've been at my workplace for 17, 18 years now.
Same job. Wow.
Same job.
And you're almost on the double long service leave.
Double long service leave is, yeah, almost.
Amazing.
Yeah. But I think now money, especially when you get to midlife, I don't know if it's midlife. Yeah, get to midlife, you think about a bit more about why you work.
Yeah, sure.
And what kind of job you want to do. So yeah, maybe like we still have to have income to provide for our family.
Yeah.
But certainly... I'll have a job, but whether or not I still have the same emphasis on the amount of money that I earn.
Yeah.
Probably it's changed a bit over time.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know. Wayne, how many years have you been working?
I've only been working for 3 years as a professional now. So I'm still a relative baby, I guess, in this whole world right now.
Dang.
But started my fourth year since July. So yeah, 3 years as a IT consultant since graduating uni. But I guess I have similar sentiments as Ping said. I did get my first job after high school, and I remember my first job was Hungry Jack's, and I remember I think I was earning around $10, and I remember going, this is amazing. Yeah. I'm getting paid for something. I didn't even think, I definitely feel like maybe over time, I have only been working for a short period, but maybe like, definitely feel like there has been a bit of a shift towards how I work my job and I guess how I'm, let's say, remunerated for it too. That's also my understanding of that is also changing over time, but it's still something that I think I'm learning given how early I am in the workforce too.
Interesting. Yeah. I just realized that, we're all in different stages of our working careers. Like Wayne's a baby out of the three of us, because you've been out the least. I've done about 5-6 years and then I've changed. And then Ping over here has been, yeah, in your same job for 17 years. So you're a senior.
I'm a proud Queensland public servant.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, share similar sentiments. When I first started out, it was just amazing. Got my own pocket money. I can spend it on things now. But as you get used to the money and earning more and more, it's then questions turn to what's it for? What can I use with this?
Because
I think there's a point where a bit more disposable income. So you've actually got a bit of freedom to how you use your money. It's not just to pay the bare minimum in your life.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
But personally, I feel like what I have deemed as the minimum I need to get by has changed. Life upgrades or lifestyle upgrades, and having shifted industry right now or job, I've had to really, really evaluate what is the bare minimum I actually need to get by. And can I be content with that? So I don't know. That's just my recent reflection on money.
I guess I'm probably in a bit of a different, a different life stage.
Yeah.
From both of you two also, in that I don't have kids. And so there's this term I've learnt just this year, which is DINK.
Yes.
If you've,
which is
for those of you that don't know, is a dual income, no kids. And, that's
Double income, no kids. Same thing.
Right? Yeah. Double income or dual. Maybe I heard it wrong.
Same thing.
So I will say, between my wife and myself, I would definitely say that I think we're at a stage right now where we're privileged to have probably more expendable income than we need to survive. And so, yeah, I guess it's definitely I don't want to sound like it's coming out as gloating, but it's definitely it's a privileged position to be in right now. But I guess if anything now, the bigger, I guess, challenge for us is how we can be generous with that, let's say, excess that we've got. I guess be good stewards of our money, given that we've got, let's say, a surplus, and then kind of wrestling with, just those inner feelings of greed and trying to work out how we use that money, and I guess how much we trust in, trusting God's control, and in letting that, excess money go.
And how's that been going for you so far?
It's been moderate, I'd say. It's a work in, I don't want to stress that term too much, but it's a work in progress. I think Zeke and myself, we've been reading a book in recent months, which is The Barefoot Disciple, not to be confused with The Barefoot Investor, but The Barefoot Disciple, which is a Christian book on how we use our finances. And we've definitely learned a lot or read about a lot of interesting points from the book. I think personally I've definitely learned a lot of things, but there's still a bit of a backlog of things that I need to action from the book.
To clarify, the Barefoot Disciple book is a specific play on the Barefoot Investor book.
Yes.
It's acknowledged in the first line of the book. And what it really targets is for people who do have a lot of disposable income, how are you going to use that money best for kingdom resources or just to invest wisely. So it's like, if you've got a big, stack of money and you don't know what to do with it, do you just use it to upgrade your lifestyle all the time? No, that's probably not the best thing, because there's bigger things out there in the world to do with it. But it also, takes into the account that if you've got mortgage to pay, that's just what you got to do with it, But yeah, and a very practical book in terms of let's section up or actually literally calculate every single dollar that you're making right now. And I mean, one thing that stood out to me is it said, when you make those lifestyle choices, like should I buy a business class seat? This is the one that stood out to me. Are you willing to match the price of that business class seat upgrade and give it to charity or something. Mm. And it says, if you're not willing, then maybe you shouldn't get that business class seat because you've actually, you could be investing that money somewhere else, but you're intentionally choosing it to do it for yourself.
Interesting.
Something like that. And it goes, well, yeah. If you're willing to match it, then yeah, by all means, go for it. But that's like a freedom, I guess, in how that expenditure is. But yeah, it's a very challenging book, and just, even if it's not exactly the how you'd apply it necessarily, it still pushes you to think in a different way.
Mm.
And I mean, one of the base principles of that book says that the minimum wage in Australia is 40 grand, and 40 grand is the top 5% in the world.
Mm.
So what are we playing with in terms of dollars? Anyway, that's just something I've learned so far from the book.
Mm-hmm.
So that's some interesting stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of good nuggets of information in that book, and it applies to a lot of different contexts too. So it doesn't just talk about just money, but even how we use that money in other things.
Mm.
So talks to things about, let's say, housing. It goes into stocks, and it goes into even business ownership. Mm. A lot of different points that are mentioned there. I'm not sure if we've got enough time to talk about it all today in this podcast, but there's a few of us around church, I'm sure, that have read it. Definitely feel free to reach out outside of this podcast. There are certain topics you wanted to talk about, I guess,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Well, let's turn our attention. I want to ask a question. What's our approach to money? How do we manage our own money? Just curious to hear your stories. Ping, I've known you for a long time. You're one of the most generous people I know, if not the most generous person I know, just based on all the years that I've known you've been to your house, and you've always been very generous with your food, your the fuel, you know, you drive me around. Your dad has always been super generous as well. It's just eat whatever from the fridge and no questions asked, anything. Where do you think that comes from, Ping? And what's your approach to money, mate?
Well, I think when I was in uni, I think my parents, they were non-Christians and they were very generous. So I think I was just challenged that a lot of the times when people will be, you know, thinking that I'm a generous like person, really, in fact, it was my parents who were quite generous.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was, you know, it's a bit unusual for like a migrant family, like my family, like my parents who didn't have a lot, but maybe it was their way of like trying to make up for the time that we lost.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe they were like, look, you know, we don't spend a lot of time with Ping because we're working all the time. At least let's provide hospitality for his friends so they can. So I think I certainly was challenged that, yeah, my parents didn't have a lot and they were generous, which meant that when I was generous, I wasn't really being generous with my own money. Like, because like I didn't feel like I was generous because really it wasn't my stuff.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. That made sense. But now, like, I think, you know, one of the things I really want to teach my kids is generosity. Because I think it's quite, which can backfire sometimes, I think. Okay. It's because, yeah, I don't try to put value on things. Mm. I just try to teach them value. And even for myself, it's like, because at the end of the day, the Bible is very clear. So we come from dust and we will leave this earth with dust. And I think most of us, when we leave this planet, and I try to tell Beck the same, look, most of us, when we leave this planet, none of us are going to be thinking, oh, I wish I had more money in my bank account.
Yep.
Mm.
But maybe the way the Bible and what it has taught us was, if you're not going to be good stewards with what I provided for you, and it's just sitting there, and, you know, there's that parable about not investing what God has given you.
Yeah, right.
Then what's the point? So I think, yeah, that's probably where we, like, where I'm landed is, you know, not waste money, but also not hold on to it with a fist that's closed.
Mm.
At the end of the day, we just look at it as it's God's money.
Yeah.
But I think certainly it can be a challenge because now I'm not just myself. I have family as well.
Yes, yes.
And my family is, we might have different ideas of how to look after money and what money is. And yeah, in a Christian environment, it can be challenging too, because you always think, oh, if I buy this, are people going to are they going to be like, oh, why? I've never flown business class, right? Right. Or maybe, I think, actually, I flew one time when we got upgraded and it was like, oh my gosh, this is this was when I was a uni student. And it's totally unexpected. And yeah, you're just in shock at that time. But now, like we said before, right? So if I'm flying economy, I'm not like, I don't feel it's value for money at the same time. But I do remember going to a talk many years ago and they say, if you're really struggling with like materialism, let's say, if you're really struggling with it, it is one way to go, hey, look, just test yourself. Are you willing to go, I'm going to spend $50 on this, but I'm also going to give $50 to this. And then, in your heart, if you know whether your heart is at the right place. Because Bible does have a lot to say about treasures and money and yes, I think Jesus talks more about money than a lot of other topics. So but it is a hard one because we don't talk about it amongst peers. Because I think it's like a that when it comes to money, it's like it's a bit of an off limit kind of discussion.
There's sort of that sense of we're trying to hide how attached we are to it. I guess I feel like the word that came to me the most was how attached am I to in this instance money. Whereas it could be a lot of things in life. What are we most attached to? And if we're willing to let it go, then that really says, I guess, how much we're attached to it, right? So whether we mask it as security or whatever, maybe those are the base things. But yeah, it's interesting.
I never really felt, and sometimes when I used to do Bible study, I never really felt the only time I ever felt like money had a hold on me was when I bought my first house. I feel like before I had a mortgage, I really was just like, I felt there's a certain sense of freedom.
Earn it, spend it.
Yeah, like I feel like if I give it away, no one's, whatever, like there's no consequence. It's when you buy your first house is when those bills and repayments come in, is when you're like, oh, this is and having a mortgage can be like a huge blessing and provide hospitality, but it can also be like this thing that just changed your relationship with money. For me anyway, that was like a big turning point.
That's what they always say, like even the secular way of thinking is buy not to your max limit, right? So that you've got some spending there. So you're not as stressed. Wiggle room. It's not mortgage stress or whatever.
Like we don't do a budget. I don't know if any of you guys do a budget. We don't do a budget, for example.
I've tried so many times, but I'm terrible. I'm the worst person to talk to about this. And honestly, I know that there are some people out there at church who do budgets and they do it very well. And it's probably their occupation. Man, I just wish I could. I wish I could have that motivation. I really admire those people.
Wayne, you got a budget, right?
I did budget before marriage, and then post marriage, I've stopped budgeting because sometimes it's not my decision. Sometimes anymore.
Yeah.
But that definitely is something that I think I wanted to try again since reading the book. But still, something I need to. Need to catch up on, I think.
Funny story. I tried to do a budget last time, like maybe it was last year. And then once I realized that my outgoing was greater than my input, I just chose not to. Just don't worry about it.
And yet here you still are. Actually, sorry. I remember what I was going to say now, which was each time I've been generous with my money, I've never ever looked back and said, oh, I wish I hadn't spent that or I hadn't given that away. because I just, once it's gone, it's gone. Right. Whereas if you can, if you give it, it's like, oh, like I wish I hadn't given that. Then I think that really says something, because that's what I used to be like. But I still struggle with it. I still struggle with the whole.
That makes me think of, I'm not sure if that's this is the same thing, but that makes me think of like purchases I've made that I'm not happy with.
Right.
Why? Know, things that I might have spent money on, I'm like, that wasn't worth it. For example, I haven't paid for, I haven't flown business class before, but you know, that could be one example, right? But no, I think maybe when it comes to, I would say when it comes to, let's say, giving to like, I guess mostly at least Christian causes, whether it be the church or yeah, people on mission, things like that, or I definitely don't, yeah, have not regretted giving to these causes.
Yeah, I think being an MTSer, you know, I'm fully crowdfunded, if we were to put it that way. And it has actually blown me away at how generous some people are, like people I would not have expected in any way. And I was like, wow. So it's been a real humbling piece to know that this is not by my own efforts that I'm earning this money, but that God's provided through people. And yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's been a really weird ride for me, and I've really grappled hard with it. Yeah, like I was saying earlier, what I actually need to live off. Because I've felt struggle, inverted commas, but I wasn't sure if it was actually real struggle or my self-preconceived notions of struggle. Mm. And I've been very open about sharing that, whether people like hearing it or not, I've been sharing it. I don't know, still trying to figure it out. But yeah, I've come to a...
Yeah, I think one thing that... Yeah, maybe I mean, we're talking about budgeting before. The one thing I try to do is budget, live a lifestyle that doesn't force your spouse to work.
Right.
I think that was always important to me, because I knew that if we had had kids, we didn't want finance to be a reason we don't have kids. And once you live a lifestyle that requires both of you to work full time, it's really hard to scale back. So yeah, we scrape by with one income, I think, you know, with all the bills and that comes in. And when Beck works, it's like a bonus, but certainly she doesn't have to work. So I mean, I know that I it's a different, I'm a bit older, I'm a bit older, so I certainly recognize that when we were purchasing our property, it was a different time then, different. These days, yeah, you have to work. I certainly recognize that. But yeah, like certainly when 10, 15 years ago, when we started this journey and yeah, we got married 9 years ago almost, I think, yeah, it's always been, we try to budget as if only I'm working and she's not. And if it means a few years of just scraping by and not have any savings at the end of the year, then we try. It's certainly like, yeah. But it's just something that we try to do.
Mm. Yeah, it's kind of like, sorry, I just had another thought. Man, talking about buying a house, I think that's the Aussie dream, right? But so we were talking about this in last session or last week. When we go to Asia or something, the perspective's so different. People over there don't own houses. They rent for life or something, because that's just the way lifestyle is. So that's not an issue. But here we go, oh, we can't afford a house and we haven't made it. Why we need to think like that? Maybe we can't be satisfied to rent for life. I don't know. Sorry, Wayne, you were going to...
That's, I've got a separate point, but I'm happy.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll come back to mine.
No, just go to yours. Just go to yours. It's fine. It's cool.
I was going to say something. We're talking about budgeting. There is something that we... There is one small rule that I think my wife JC and I follow, or rather I think JC follows it harder than I do. But it's the principle of tithing. I think she was raised to, I think the way she was raised also, she was raised to give, as in like the practice of giving 10% whenever she has income. So it's like the first paycheck she gets every, regular, whatever period she gets, she immediately she calculates the 10% and just gives it right off. And we do know that's Old Testament, and so in Jesus we're not necessarily forced to or called to do that exactly. But I think something since then, I guess another one learning that that stuck with me that I think about is, you know, in the New Testament we have Jesus, and Jesus doesn't not only follow the law, but like not only does he, let's say, follow the law, but the example that he sets, if anything, is an even higher bar than just following the rules. So in light of Jesus, I think it doesn't mean that we can give less than 10%, but if Jesus raises the bar from that, then that shouldn't that also raise the bar for tithing too? And so I acknowledge that everyone's in different circumstances. You may not, money might be difficult for you, but I think something that we've been challenged to do, or something that JC's been already doing, but I think personally I've been challenged to not only, let's say, make that minimum, but to go even further, especially when I'm in this position right now where we are dinks. And so while we can...
Dual income, no kids, by the way.
Yes, sorry. I should reiterate that.
Just in case you came in late. Yeah. Or didn't listen. You went over a speed bump or something. Yeah,
and so that's like, I guess, something that I do have to remind myself sometimes now. I think sometimes I'm like, oh, it's so much money I give away, maybe. But I think, you know, then I go, if Jesus raises the bar, then... If only Jesus only raises the bar in light of, I guess... the Torah, then I should also follow, you know, try to follow suit.
That's an interesting personal challenge. Man, we have such different personal challenges.
I was gonna say we're all in different positions, so I acknowledge I don't have kids right now too, so that I think that definitely changes the game a bit for yourselves, Ping and Zeke.
Yeah, it's just interesting to hear your perspective, and then Ezekiel, you know, you're being an MTSer, and you just talk about your income is, you're relying on other people to basically fund your income, and I can't imagine what that's like. If I knew that, I'll probably like overthink every time I spend money or something. I just have to be like, oh, is this worth it? Or, you know, do I really need this?
That's exactly it.
Yeah, I feel like if I go on holiday, do I need this? Or, you know, can my family afford this? So I think, and then obviously Wayne being a dink. I don't have acronym. What's my acronym know. Like?
I don't think
family dad with, you know, FD,
FDW,
FD, W, 3K. Yeah. But I think, money is such, we won't like, it's very complicated because on one hand, let's say we had a really wealthy person walk off the street and they're a non-Christian. We want them to feel welcome at church.
Yes.
So we want them to feel like, you know, I'm welcome at church. Yes. And on the other end, none of us really know how much time we have left on this earth. And it's like, I feel like there is a natural sense for us to seek security in money. So a lot of times, if we had money in the bank, we just feel like a bit secure.
Yep.
Whereas a lot of my friends at work, they've been living paycheck to paycheck since they were young. It's like, if they had, you know, that's just how they're raised. Maybe how we're raised is like security is a house. Security is having things that's like set in stone.
Assets,
and, you know, not... even though we do live in a time where I hope that when my kids grow up, I'm certainly not going to be like, hey, you guys won't be able to afford it anyway. But you know, you try as you might, you'll be it'll be difficult. But yeah, I do, I do think it's, yeah, everybody at church will have different views on money.
Yeah, it's so hard to, even having these conversations with my parents, say, for example, it's such different perspectives and we come from such different places that the presumptions are so far apart of what. Because, yeah, I think there's something more than just money. There's something behind money. So, for example, like security or,
yes,
you know, whatever else it is. Money is just a...
the means, or yeah, the most surface level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is money? We go back to that question. Yeah. Hey, good on you, Ping. So, I don't know. I feel like having these conversations is just... it's always so different to each person. And I find it quite difficult as well, myself. And you're saying, like, you know, for... let's call it like really wealthy people, right? There is challenges there as well. And you can't apply the same rules all the time. I mean, there is like how you're using your money best always. But then there's also other questions like, can you enjoy your money if you've been in a position of privilege to have so much money? Is that okay? Like it shouldn't be a guilt thing that you can't have money to...
yeah, to have, you can't have nice spend. Things, yeah.
And actually going back to your point about me being an MTSer and since I'm crowdfunded, watching every dollar and going, oh, can I spend it on this or that? I learned early on, it was such a burden on my mind to think that all the time that I had to give it up, because if I did, I just could not get by. And I just had to go, you know what? I'm just going to be responsible with my money, but I'm still going to have some freedom to spend, you know. Otherwise... it's so hard to get by. I don't know how to take it on mentally. So
I found it really taxing. A few, like, where there was a period of my time where when I first got my mortgage, I used to check my bank balance quite often.
Yeah, right.
I found that when I did that, it was quite stressful.
Mm.
So now it's like I find it's better just don't check. Like, it's because at the end of the day, we. Yeah. Yeah, it's like what, nothing's gonna change. Like it's not something that it's gonna affect my day to day outcome. It's just like I didn't want my identity to be like the balance I have in the bank.
Sure.
So it's like that's not my that's not gonna make or break. You know, it's focus on the important things and then recognizing that there are people at church who may be struggling with finances and they don't have everything to make ends meet.
Yeah.
And then, we know, like, you know, in the Bible, in the early church days, you know, people just lived as one family kind of thing, you know, in those days where if the church needed money, people just sold it and then...
yeah.
It was like one bank account for the whole church, right?
Nice.
It's like, oh, I'm sure if we did that, you'll be just fine. So it's... I still remember the days where we bought the church building and we got a loan and people really stepped up too.
People stepped
up when we built the creche and people stepped up when we did the renos of for the new toilets and mezzanine area. So I think God is quite faithful to our church.
I was just to add to that, though my position maybe different in this, in my current season of life, as I don't want to say the term again.
Dink.
Yes. I was just reminded, you know, in the New Testament, we've got the parable of, the parable of the,
we can help you out, mate.
The two rich men and the person who gives the two copper pennies, who give out of
the
rich men who give out of their savings, their excess money.
Right, sure.
And
there's a poor woman with the one coin.
With the gold coin.
Gave everything to she had. Yep.
Yes. Okay. And similarly, there's another passage I was just thinking of, which is which talks about giving. It's about your heart as you give. I was just really quickly searching it up. But saying each of you, from 2 Corinthians 9, it says, each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver.
Yep.
And so I guess in light of the New Testament too, there is no hard number you have to give.
No.
You know, you don't have to set aside X money. Mm. But it also definitely matters about, you know, your heart coming into it and your, yeah. And yeah, I guess in how much in that amount that you're giving that yep. it's intentionally given with the mm. right heart too.
Yeah. A lot of thoughts about money. I cannot say for sure what our landing point is here, because I feel like we've sort of just gone all over the place. But it's such a huge topic, and you could really do several weeks just thinking about it.
I feel like it applies differently to each person, yeah. Depending on circumstance. It's very circumstantial.
Yeah.
I think too.
Yeah, I know we talk about a lot of different things.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think the main point is still like valid. For example, like we know that we don't worship money,
mm.
and offering to God is a form of worship for mm. us.
Mm.
So I think there's a lot of little points, but certainly I think being a Christian allows us to have to know that what we have is given to us by God. So I think that drives how we look at money.
Mm.
Like we don't look at money as it's I earned it, this is mine, I'll do whatever I want with it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of thought that I think if anything that just shows that there's a lot of thought that goes into money when you're a Christian.
Mm.
Whereas if you're not, you probably just have, spend, make more. It's mm. probably as simple as that. And when you're a Christian, there's just a lot more to think about.
Maybe it needs to be that simple. Have, spend it. Maybe not on yourself, but spend it in XX area.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
You don't have to think so hard about building up an empire. It's just have, spend.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just keep going through.
It goes into another... I'll try to make this parable? Quick. No, not another parable this time, but another maybe activity.
Okay.
That might help. Not for everyone, but I personally found this helpful, which is when it comes to giving, sometimes it does help if there is maybe a regular debit that comes from your account that's almost immediately taken out.
Yeah.
So you're not actually performing there. It's harder to let go when you're actually having to do the activity of
But maybe paying. That's a challenge.
But
each week,
and that's
you have to press the button.
Yes, and there's also a place for. And I was going to say both actually are important. I was going to say I think regular giving and almost like a debit actually helps for those that might have a harder time letting go of money, in one-offs. But there's definitely also spirit. I think there's definitely spirit-led moments where I think it does need to be an active, action that you make to give money to, as opposed to just letting it be something passive. Nevertheless, you know, even the immediate moment when you do choose to make to set up a direct debit, that technically is an active decision too. But I think there's wisdom in both ways. Either way, as Ping was saying, I guess it's also a way in which we are being, let's say, intentional with our money and showing that it's not our idol.
Yep. All right. Well, a lot of good thoughts there. We really should wrap it up. I've just got to say, it's been a good conversation. It has been for all these weeks. And this is going to be the last one.
That's sad. So I'm crying right now. You can't see me.
Never say never.
Never say never. But no, I think, we've thought a lot about work. This week, we've thought about money. And clearly, very big topics. I know... It stirred a lot of different things in different people, whether it's comfortable or mostly uncomfortable. And that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing, because learning to let go and trust God is, no matter what area of our life, is probably the hardest thing.
I've got a quote for you. I just remembered.
Okay, thanks, Ping.
It was from this book about these missionaries who gave up like everything.
Okay.
And he said, it's never foolish to give up what you cannot keep. To gain what you cannot lose.
Wow, that was deep.
Say it again, Ping.
It's never foolish to give up what you cannot keep to gain what you cannot lose.
Well done, Ping. The fact that you remembered that so well as well. I'm impressed, man.
It's probably a different, probably The overall meaning is there, but it's probably like not.
You said it so well.
That was right. That was a very well said. That's regardless.
I think that's it. That must be. We'll look it up later. Yeah, but yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. Man, how can I not end it like that? That's a well done, Bing.
That was great.
Yeah, I think you should continue with the podcast.
If we come back, we'll come up with.
Yeah, we'll come
name.
Back. We'll come back.
Find me a producer, a talent booker.
Yeah, if you're listening to this and you've dreamed editor. Of being a producer and editor. Please talk to Ezekiel.
Anyway. Okay, guys, I'm going to actually properly wrap it up there. Thanks, Ping and Wayne, for coming on for these last couple of weeks. I don't know what else to say. Hope you guys have a good week.
Make sure to say great job to Zeke for these last 10 episodes too. He's done a great job.
It's just, nah, it's fine. Thank you. Thank you for your compliments. It's not about
Ezekiel
me.
Ezekiel in April, actually. The A to Z. A to Z.
Yeah.
All right. See you guys.
Right. Thanks, Ezekiel.